Welcome to this week's edition of Legal Line. This is Bob Pittman, and you're listening to the Legal Line Network right here at bobpittman.com. We try each week to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and hopefully point you in the right direction with regard to your legal problems. And, of course, from time to time, we have some great guests who come on and help educate us about different areas of the law and life in general. And today we have Liz Heath, who is the, now, is it the executive director of the Nonprofit Center?
Right.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks this is for, fun.
Yeah, this is great. We have, we've created our own network, as you know. and we are out each and every week with a new Bobcast, I guess we could call it, and talking about all kinds of different fun issues. But what on earth, I mean, tell us, what on earth is the Nonprofit Center? I think it's one of the best-kept secrets in the area. Now, maybe that's not true. But
it is true.
I think
it
it's kind
true.
Of a secret. Which
it is
be
a
exposed.
Secret because we're behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And as much as we're out in the community, people don't realize that we're there. We're what's known as a capacity-building organization. Now, that's inside speak for what we do is help other nonprofits improve their management and leadership capacity so they can fulfill their mission.
Very good.
So we don't feed the hungry. We don't shelter the homeless. We work with those nonprofits to help them improve their internal operations and their leadership so that they can feed the hungry and shelter the homeless more effectively.
Interesting.
So they can make better use of the contributed money that they're given to do that work.
Which is always good.
So we're behind the scenes. In the for-profit world, we would be a management consultant, sort of.
Sure.
We would also be an accounting firm. We would also be a leadership development firm. But you can't make a profit doing what we do.
No.
So we're a nonprofit.
Well, the profit is in the building of the nonprofit community
exactly.
to help everybody.
Absolutely. Our mission is to build strong nonprofits for a better community.
And that's a pretty nice profit, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
If you will.
But we know if the nonprofit sector is stronger, the whole community is better off.
Absolutely. And I think it's got to be so hard for a lot of nonprofits to try to figure out how things even work. I mean, I hear people all the time say, oh, yeah, I'm going to start a nonprofit, or I'm going to do this.
Oh, heaven help us.
Wow, good luck. You know, how are you going to actually do it?
Well, you know, there are, I don't even know the numbers of how many nonprofits are formed each year, but it's increasing all the time. A lot of people are very passionate about doing something good in the community, and that is really wonderful. Sadly, those people much of the time don't understand how to run an organization, how to run a business. While we are a nonprofit, we still have to hire people. We have to take care of our money. We have a higher standard that we have to subscribe to in taking care of our money because people give us our money.
Right.
To be crass about it, we play with other people's money. We have a responsibility to them to show them, and I mean all nonprofits.
That's right.
So we have to be financial managers, we have to be HR experts, and in addition, we have to be able to work with volunteers, we have to be able to work with boards. It's harder. It's easier to run a small business than it is to run a nonprofit.
I was just thinking that because, you know, as a law practice, I have a small business too.
Right.
And that's a lot easier than what you're describing.
Exactly.
I have to tell you. I don't know if I have volunteer. I have to think about whether I have, I may have an occasional volunteer, I suppose, even, but that's a tough job. And I think a lot of people look at nonprofits and say, oh, it's just, you know, it's, they have no clue what's actually going on.
That's right.
You know, and maybe they donate. Maybe you go and donate to a food bank or whatever it might be. And but you really don't know what's going on once you've given those dollars. You hope that everything is okay, but hope isn't always the best thing to base your
investment in the
community.
No, it's not. It's not. And you know that whole issue of determining whether or not a nonprofit is using its funds wisely and is doing what they say they're going to do is a giant issue. Many people who falter in that do so out of just not knowing what they should have been doing. And being so wrapped up in the passion of what they're doing that they don't have time and don't want to spend money on learning how to do it right internally. Yeah. Others do.
Well, but they also may not know that you exist to help them. Because if they knew,
that's right.
They'd probably be flocking to your door.
Well, and they would be flocking to our door, but we charge for our services.
Sure.
We generate somewhere around 65-70% of our revenue through fees for service.
Oh, okay.
We keep them as cheap as we can. If you are a member of the center, one of our half-day seminars costs you
$50. Oh, very good.
So that's 3 hours of information and skills that you didn't have before
right.
you walked in the door.
On a topic that is probably
on
critical.
A topic that's relevant.
Yep.
Most of our seminars, we do about 30 seminars a year. Most of them are on management topics, HR, planning, finance. We do a lot on finance. We do a little bit with nonprofit boards, although we have a conference just for boards. So that's where most of our governance work is done. But those seminars teach marketing, fundraising, and that's where they get the skills. But $50 is a hurdle for some people.
Yeah.
If we could keep that price low enough so that more people could use it, the sector would be
sure.
better. So this is a crass statement about we need more money to do that.
Right.
You know, it's
but that's
we run very, very thin.
Right. But that's a real investment in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people don't realize that something like you exists as something that really helps all the other all the actually on the pavement nonprofits
right.
take care of their job, whether it's I'm just picking on food banks today for some reason, but a food bank or a clothing bank or
whatever.
You name the
yes.
nonprofit.
And those are incredibly important organizations
Absolutely.
In our community. And many of them are very, very well run.
Sure.
The Fish Food Bank System, for example, is their executive director is a very good, Beth Elliott, strong person,
yeah.
does a really good job. In other communities, there are food banks that, you know, the people squabble over whether or not we should give people 2 cans of corn instead of 1 can of corn,
sure.
and they're not focused on long-term sustainability. And again, I'm picking on food banks. Nobody, I'm not thinking of anybody in particular, but you have to have the passion, but you also have to have the business sense.
You really do, and I think that that is probably scary to people who want to get involved maybe in a nonprofit, and maybe not something they think of immediately, but to be effective as a nonprofit and actually last longer than a few months, because I have a feeling a number of them kind of are maybe a flash.
They never
the
really go away.
Yeah.
Very few are dissolved.
Yeah.
They just go dormant.
Yeah, which is sad.
Which
too,
is sad because
yeah, presumably
what's happened
to
the money that was given to
that's
them.
That's a good point.
But
also they were designed to serve some need, and probably that need is still out there, and it's not being served.
Absolutely.
You know?
A lot of donors are concerned about whether or not so many nonprofits are duplicating
mm-hmm.
services as well. And that can sometimes be a concern.
Sure.
But the effective ones are focused on areas of need that are where they aren't duplicated.
Right.
And they're doing a good job. And if somebody else comes, actually, I had a visit from somebody a couple of weeks ago who wanted to know what we did because she wanted to start an organization like ours. And we had a really interesting conversation. She did a really good job. She, excuse me, she came and talked to us. She didn't just start it.
Right.
And she has a spin on some of the work that will mesh with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a good conversation. You've got our website up on your
right.
screen, and I want to point out that if anybody wants to start a nonprofit, we have a checklist on our website on the left-hand side
of
the screen.
This is at npcenter.org.
That's right.
npcenter.org. We'll put a link up at the links page of LegalLine, too. We'll get that.
Great.
Up. We'll get Jeff to work on that right
Super.
Away.
Super.
But here's a tab right here for starting a nonprofit.
Right, and there's a 10-point checklist.
Oh, that's terrific.
And if you can't do all those 10 things, then don't start.
Oh, interesting.
I've had people say to me, well, that doesn't matter. I'm going to start because I know what I'm doing.
I know I can do it.
I know I can do it, yep. But my area of expertise is boards. Uh-huh. I've done a lot of work with nonprofit boards over the years, many, many years. And so that's the tie-in to LegalLine, because sure. boards have real legal responsibility.
Absolutely.
And
people don't have
often
a clue,
they
I think,
don't have a clue. Exactly.
What am I getting myself into here?
I just came from a seminar where we were talking about that very thing.
Yeah.
Executive directors talking about their boards, and I'm not going to name any names.
That's not the purpose.
But the frustration that they have, because the board members don't do their job, and the boards don't understand that they have a legal responsibility to do that. So
let's say that again. The board members have a legal responsibility.
They have a legal responsibility.
And whether you like it or not, I mean, it is not. I was going to say not just an honorary position. It's probably just not an honorary position.
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
And sad to say, a majority of board members really view that role as something added on, a nice thing to do. It is a nice thing to do.
Something you put on your website or your resume or something, you know. But it's
or they care about the organization and what it does. Excuse me. But they don't recognize that the law says they must do some things. Now, I'm not a lawyer.
No.
But this part I know.
Yep.
Corporate law says that all directors, this is for-profit or non-profit, must adhere to the duty of care, the duty of loyalty, and the duty of obedience.
So the duty of care, the duty of loyalty, and the duty of obedience.
Right.
Interesting.
So we'll do a quick little seminar.
Let's do that.
The duty of care, I think, is the most critical one. It says that you must take care to do a good job for your organization. So that means that you have to understand what your organization does. You have to understand the issues that are being discussed in the boardroom. You have to make the best decision you can for the future of the organization. And if you don't do those things, you're violating the law.
Yeah.
In this part of the country, we're really nice to each other. Mm-hmm. At least some of us are.
Yeah.
And many people think that debating issues, asking questions, being the devil's advocate is not a nice thing to do.
That's rude. You shouldn't be doing that.
Exactly. The law says you must.
Yeah.
The duty of care says you must. You must ask those questions. You must debate those issues, because collectively that's how you come to the best decision for your board.
It makes sense when you say
the law.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
When you say it. And yet, how many people just sit by and either don't attend or attend in person only, but they're not really there.
Exactly.
And one or two people maybe are doing all the things or running everything, and they let it happen.
Or as everybody sits around, the president says, well, has everybody read the reports we're about to approve? And there's a big shuffling and nobody's read them.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
You've got to prepare.
Sure.
You've got to know what the topics are. You've got to learn. You have to understand about the field of service. You have to understand about what it means to be a board member. There is no comparable position in the for-profit world. There are boards of for-profit organizations.
Right.
Most of the time, the CEO or the executive director is a voting member of that board.
Right.
In our world, in the nonprofit world, the CEO or the executive director, most of the time, is not a voting member.
That's interesting.
The board has the power. But who lives it 24/7?
Yeah,
the CEO.
That's right.
So not only do you have to understand that you have the power that is going to shape the future of this organization, but you really have to develop a strong, good relationship with your CEO or your executive director, because they're the ones who know what's going on.
That's right.
But you still have to learn more as a board member. So that's the duty of care.
Okay. Interesting.
Duty of loyalty. When you're in the boardroom, you act for the best interest of the organization, not anybody else, not yourself, not the group you represent, not your friend on the board. not anybody else. It's for the best. So it's being loyal.
Now, that one, I think, is missed, I have to believe, a lot.
You think?
I'll bet. I wonder if people even think that when they go in sometimes.
They have no concept.
Yeah, I'll bet not.
What if a board member is a friend of somebody who provides legal services, a lawyer?
Right, sure.
And the organization needs a lawyer. So if I'm a board member and I'm your friend, I'm going to push for you.
Yeah.
The fact that you don't do that kind of law has nothing to do with
doesn't
it.
Doesn't matter. Huh?
Doesn't matter. I mean, so I violated the duty of loyalty.
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense when you say it.
Yep.
But how often does that happen? I'll bet all the time.
People are getting better about it. The IRS is now asking us if we have a conflict of interest policy.
Ah, yes.
And how we implement that. So the IRS has no authority to punish us if we don't have it. But a little sidebar, every nonprofit submits a form to the IRS every year. Mm-hmm. It's called the Form 990.
Right.
And it tells the IRS where we got our money and how we used it.
Okay.
And it tells the world that, too, because that form is posted on the web.
That's right. You can go online and
GuideStar.org.
990.
Yep.
So we could go on and find the nonprofit centers?
You could.
990 if we wanted to.
That's right.
Interesting.
And so the world will know whether or not you've got a conflict of interest statement. So you want to be able to check that box.
Sure.
So
you want to make sure people know what it means, though, because I think conflict of interest, sometimes people say, oh, well, that's not a conflict of interest. That's just my friend over there who happens to be an attorney, and that's
right.
not a conflict.
Right. Or how about the sign maker who sits on the board of a downtown association?
Oh, boy.
Who is on the board, who joined the board so he could get that business.
And you know that happens.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
That's a real situation that I dealt with years ago. And the board wisely said, we're going to do an RFP. And he got so angry that he left the board.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
But it's called self-dealing.
Yeah, but it happens. I mean, lawyers who join boards think, well, I'll end up with legal business. Or accountants who say, well, I'll end up with accounting business.
They shouldn't. And actually, most lawyers and accountants don't do that. As a matter of fact, most lawyers and accountants don't want to be on the finance or the policy committee, respectively. They want to do something different.
Sure.
As a lawyer, if you're sitting on a board, you bring that knowledge to the table, and it's important for you to flag an issue to say, we need to deal with this.
Yep.
But the lawyer that the organization pays should never sit on the board.
That makes sense.
So the same thing with the finance person. We need to look at this finance thing, but they're not the CPA that does the audit.
Right. That makes perfect sense.
And most professionals get that.
I wonder, though, about smaller groups that haven't been through any kind of training and have just started up, and I have to believe there is some, maybe even it's, I don't know if it's inadvertent abuse. Maybe that's I don't know if that's a good term, but or just accidental, they're not thinking. Although, obviously, a lawyer should be thinking about things like that and thinking, gee, is this right?
Most of the lawyers and the CPAs do, but from the nonprofit side, I've had people say to me, can you help us recruit a lawyer? We need somebody to do our legal work. Can you help us to recruit a CPA for our board? We need our books done.
Sure.
no CPA or lawyer that's any good is going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
They may help a little pro bono. But
sure, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That does make sense. Interesting.
So the third one and the final one is duty of obedience.
Okay.
And
duty
some lawyers
of obedience.
Some lawyers wrap that into the duty of care because it really is integrated. And it means obey the law, obey your mission.
Hmm.
So
that assumes you have a mission, by the way.
You've got to have something like that, or you can't get C3, get tax exempt status.
That's true.
Obeying your mission is an interesting thing, especially in tough times.
Yeah.
Because, well, I'll use us as an example. We work with other nonprofits. We strengthen nonprofits. That's our mission. We do that through education and consulting and back office work. what if somebody came to us and said, we will give you $100,000 a year if you will set up a restaurant mm-hmm. that trains people in restaurant work.
Right.
Doesn't have anything to do with our mission. But we would get $100,000 a year. Oh, my goodness, let me tell you, that would be hard to turn down.
A little bit of temptation here.
A big temptation. But we can't do that. Now, that's a big example. That's an egregious example. But you get the point.
It does make the point, though. You would want it. You have to be thinking, and in these hard times where you really desperately need that $100,000 or that whatever it is.
Exactly.
How tempting it might be to either revise your mission or just do it. Say, oh, yeah, that was that extra line that we left off a while back. Let's put it back in.
I actually did it once.
Uh-huh.
We were in, we run, as I said, very, very lean. We're always right on the edge. And we were asked to do a project that would bring us 10 grand. And we really could use that 10 grand.
Yeah.
And so we did it.
Uh-huh.
It was more closely related to our mission than that was.
Right.
It was managing a large group of volunteers in a large project. So at least it had to do with nonprofits.
Right.
But it pulled us away from our regular work so much that while we got the cash, we really had some struggles getting back on track.
Right.
So I learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah, I bet that is a real temptation, though.
Yep, it is. Sure it is. Money is hard to come by.
Yeah, but that also means, though, that you are really close to your mission statement, if you will. You really own it. And you
yep.
know, you understand. Sometimes, maybe especially with people just joining maybe a board after the nonprofit's been going for a while, you know, do they really embrace that mission, one would have to ask.
And if they don't, they shouldn't be on the board.
Right.
If they don't care about that, that's the first criteria.
Yeah. But that says that you've got to be doing some extra work as you invite people to be on your board. That's a hard one, too, I'll bet.
It is. It is. And it's getting harder because it's getting harder and more demanding to be a board member.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I used to say that small boards are better than big boards. And most current wisdom is that size of 12 to 15 members is about right.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's mostly true. A board of seven, I used to envy a board of seven because it's so much easier to manage.
I'll bet.
But the trade-off is there's so much less time available for board work because you've only got seven people doing it versus 15 people doing it. So I'm starting to skew to the larger boards, you know, 15 to 20, somewhere in there. But and back to the final thing on the duty of obedience, obey the law.
Yes.
So if you're not a lawyer, how do you know what the law is? And I'm here to tell you, most nonprofits don't know what the law is, but we are so lucky in this state because the King County Bar Association Young Lawyers Division writes the nonprofit handbook.
That's right.
And it's available online.
You can download. It's a PDF file.
It's a PDF. Right. It's a big PDF file.
Yeah, I have it. I haven't actually printed it, but I have it.
I actually have printed it because I'm old and I like looking at paper.
Well, it's tempting because you want to print it up on three-hole punch and stick it in a big binder. It's 150.
It's almost 300 pages.
Yeah, it's a huge. That's a really good point. Now, that is available at the King County Bar website.
We've got an easier way to find it now.
Okay,
There's an organization called Washington Attorneys Assisting Community Organizations.
Oh, say that again.
Washington Attorneys Assisting Community Organizations.
Okay.
They coordinate pro bono legal services for nonprofits.
Okay.
It's based in Seattle, but they'll try to recruit pro bono attorneys anywhere there's a need.
Very good.
They don't do litigation. It's business matters, mm-hmm. corporate matters, that sort of thing. And they are the ones that are the distributors for the nonprofit handbook.
Oh, very good.
And they are known as WACO, W-A-A-C-O. Now, my little joke that I always say that they get very mad about is you can't call them Waco or Wacko. It's Waco.
Like taco.
Right, like taco. Good. Washington Attorneys, W-A-A-C-O dot org. And on their website is a link to the nonprofit handbook.
Oh, this is good.
As well as,
there it is. Right there. That was easy.
Yeah.
Waco.org, W-A-A-C-O.
Right.
.org. I like it.
And you can apply to get pro bono legal services. You have to go through an application process. If you're starting a nonprofit, you will be asked to have done some work, such as completed everything on our checklist. They use our checklist as one of their thresholds for qualification.
Yeah, this is great.
And you also, you know, you have to not have the money to pay an attorney. They'll want to know your financial status as well.
So the Gates Foundation is going to have a hard time getting free.
Absolutely.
Nothing against the Gates Foundation.
Nothing against the Gates Foundation.
They seem to have a few bucks there in the bank account.
You know, you mentioned Gates, and I just have to tell you, we're the fiscal sponsor for a new nonprofit.
Oh.
Fiscal sponsor means we loan our tax-exempt status to an emerging organization.
Okay.
Our policies require that they be in the process of getting their own tax-exempt status. But some fiscal sponsors will be sponsors forever and ever.
I see.
But this is just how we do it. Well, the organization for which we are the fiscal sponsor is an organization called Washington Nonprofits.
Oh.
It's a state association of nonprofits.
Okay.
And we just got a big Gates grant.
Oh, terrific.
For the development of the state association. Yeah, it is great.
Well, now, isn't that neat, though? You know, you wonder sometimes where some of the money goes in nonprofits. I mean, here's the Gates Foundation helping.
They care about the nonprofit sector in Washington.
That's neat.
And Washington Nonprofits, the new state association, we are incorporated. Right. I'm a board member. The Nonprofit Center is the fiscal sponsor.
That's neat.
We are dedicated to strengthening the sector throughout the state.
Which is great.
Not just Seattle.
Yeah, which is great.
As a matter of fact, we are very seriously avoiding, we won't have an office in Seattle. Our board members, I'm on the forming board, but we're going to get a full board soon, will be representative of the entire state. We're doing it by congressional district.
Oh, very good. Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and then we'll have some at-large people. Right. But this organization is to work for the benefit of all nonprofits, primarily in advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
This is another thing, another legal thing.
Right.
A lot of nonprofits think it's illegal for them to do advocacy.
Oh, okay.
And it's not.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, who better to tell the state legislature the impact of the cuts than those people serving the ones whose services will be cut?
Very good point.
And it's legal for us to do that.
Very good. Now, I learn every day. I just learn something new.
Right. Because you thought it was illegal for us to do that, didn't
you? If
you
had asked me, let's say, in a little tester, I would have said yes. My immediate reaction would be that you should not.
There is that myth out there.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So Washington Nonprofits will have a significant role in nonprofit advocacy. Remember at the beginning I called us a capacity-building organization.
Right.
There are others like us around the state. There's one, a small one in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
There is one in Seattle. Well, there are several in Seattle. Sometimes community foundations take on that role.
Mm-hmm.
The Grace Harbor Community Foundation is doing a great job with that.
That's interesting.
The Jefferson County Community Foundation is doing some of that. There's one in Spokane. And so where capacity building services like ours are already available, the state association won't provide those services.
Sure.
But, you know, I just named it only a few communities.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of communities that don't have that resource. So the state association will leverage what exists and get it there.
Right.
So there's the advocacy piece, but there's also the strengthening of the entire sector throughout the state.
That's very exciting, I have to say. And it's such a, this is an area that I think just people have no clue that it's going on. It's
and you know why? You know, we can't afford marketing.
That's right.
It's all about, we don't put money into marketing. Yeah. I mean, we do some guerrilla marketing. Yeah. But no, I'm so, the State Association has been my dream for about 15 years. It is exciting. It's really exciting.
Now, will we be able to get more information about that on your website, the nonprofit?
Actually, don't go there yet, but in a couple of weeks, because it's we have a website.
Sure.
It's washingtonnonprofits.org.
Okay.
Very simple.
Right.
All spelled out.
Okay.
It's really old information right now, so we're updating it right now. But unifying, bringing together all the nonprofits is so critical to the success of the sector and therefore to the state.
But it's critical to all of us. I mean, as you look at the budget crisis that continuing, I mean, the forever budget crisis in the government, I don't think we can be looking to the government for more money down the road for
absolutely
important
not.
Things in our communities.
But look at this. Just look at the mental health issue.
Yeah.
People with mental health problems, challenges.
Sure.
If they don't get services, if they are left to survive on their own and they don't have the capacity to do that, homelessness goes up, demands on food banks go up, demands on hospital emergency rooms go up, demands on police and firefighters go up.
Absolutely.
So we're paying the price.
Absolutely. And it impacts each and every one of us.
Absolutely.
In our everyday lives, more and more as time goes by.
And so the goal of Washington Nonprofits is to strengthen the nonprofit sector across the state. The goal of the Nonprofit Center is to strengthen the sector in the South Puget Sound region.
Right.
So this work is absolutely essential
to
the health of our communities.
It is. And now people can, I can envision where people really do want to support the work of, say, the Nonprofit Center and maybe later, obviously, the Washington nonprofit, the statewide group. And they can really feel like they're helping everyday nonprofits that we encounter
by
coming into the background and helping make sure that they're healthy. It's really a prevention kind of a thing, too, I guess. Preventive medicine, I guess, or law.
It is. It is. It's preventive as well as corrective.
But I can see a picture being painted where one would want to maybe even consider donating a couple of dollars, seriously, to a group like that because it helps everybody then.
We served in the last calendar year 486 organizations.
That's terrific, though.
Over 1,000 different people.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And
that's exciting.
So, yeah, it is exciting. And we do this with a budget of under $400,000 a year.
My goodness. See, that's one thing, too. You look at when we get, and I'm not anti-government here, but when you know, when we throw money into the government, we need government. I'm not, you know, but this
I
is
understand.
Great. But everybody says, oh, I wonder how much of the dollars actually end up going to something, you know, positive, and a number of things do. But when you go into the nonprofit sector, my feeling is always that those dollars, for the most part, are really being spent well.
Yes, they are.
I mean,
for the most part. There are the outliers, yes. But
in general, like if I send $100 to the nonprofit center, I have a feeling that those dollars are really going.
12 of them will go to support our administration and fundraising.
Only 12. Wow.
And that's good in the general perspective, but it's not so good because what does that say about what we pay our people?
Yeah.
What does that say about the benefits we give our staff?
Yeah. I suppose.
What does that say about what we spend on marketing and fundraising? So a really logical percentage is more in the 15 to 20% range.
Because you want to know that some money is being spent on the administration.
Those organizations who say we only have a 2 or 3% overhead, I say to them, are you paying your people?
Right.
Are you treating your staff well?
Yeah.
Because you can't be.
Or
else you're lying.
Right. And maybe people feel it's okay to not treat nonprofit staff as well. I don't know if that's in that.
Oh, absolutely.
They say, oh, yeah, it's just a
nonprofit. It's just a nonprofit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that just gets my hackles I'll bet. Up.
I'm being very careful when I say that.
No, you're absolutely right. I grew up in the 50s, and my mother did good works. She was on the board of a couple of nonprofits, and she was a UNICEF coordinator. I carried that little jack-o'-lantern around.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting this down.
No, no.
But it was a nice thing. You know,
sure.
Husbands would figuratively pat their wives on the head and say, thank you for doing good works. You're a good person.
Yeah.
Well, it's a business.
Yeah.
And it's different than for-profit business.
Sure.
Very different. That's what some business people don't get when they sit on the boards. But you do have to operate like a business. You have people who depend on you for their livelihood. You have to treat them well. You have to pay the rent. You have to pay for the phones. You have to buy the computers. Oh, please.
Yeah.
Our computers are so out of date.
I understand you're working on the old DOS system.
Not quite that bad.
People listening are saying, the what?
But because we're old, we know what it is.
That's right. Someone was telling me the other day, said, well, gee, Bob, I feel uncomfortable saying you sound like a broken record because nobody's going to know that that's what I mean.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. I said, what do I say now?
There is no such thing as a broken iPod download, is there?
I don't know what to, interrupted downloaders. I don't know what, I don't know what to say.
You know, I wanted to go back to one thing about Washington nonprofits before I forget. Depending on what you're counting, there are anywhere between 14,000 and 28,000 nonprofits in the state of Washington.
My goodness.
I think the 14,000 number, and I'm not great in memory, but I'm pretty sure it's those that actually report.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So 14,000 nonprofits around the state. Many people will say, well, most of them are in Seattle, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of nonprofits in Seattle.
Sure.
But you know, the interesting fact is that on a per capita basis, the numbers are equal or even a little higher on the east side.
Oh, really?
On a per capita basis. And my conclusion about that is, I wouldn't have guessed it either. Yeah. I did the numbers and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So I asked somebody else who really gets involved in those numbers, and he looked at it and he said, you know, you're absolutely right.
Hmm.
And my conclusion is that every community needs to have a structure of, they need food banks, they need shelters, they need hospitals, they need childcare, they need mental health services, whatever. Every community needs that. So on a per capita basis, the state is about equal.
Interesting.
Or maybe even a little higher on the east side. So I want my east side friends to know that.
That's right. And
my friend from Spokane said when somebody was talking about Seattle being the center of the universe, she said, I just want you to know the east side is not Bellevue.
Yeah.
It's on the other side of the mountains.
That's true.
I love that line.
Yes.
The east side is on the other side of the mountains. It's not Bellevue. Yeah.
When someone says east side next time, I would say, well, now what part of Spokane are you?
Excellent. You do that.
I'll do that. We'll have some listeners calling in eventually from the east side, the real east side down the road.
But to get back to your thing about contributions, of course,
we
all survive on contributions. Donors need to be smart and make sure the organizations to whom they give are doing well. We have some very wonderful donors who are very supportive.
Yeah.
But, of course, we can always use more.
That's right. So it's okay to now if people
it's okay
wanna,
to donate.
That's right. It's okay to donate. If people want to do that, you can do it. Now, on the website, there's obviously lots of good contact information, I'm sure.
I don't know. Yes, there is lots of good contact information.
And I even see one that says donate now. Look at that.
And that
this is cool.
That is – we have a very low-tech website in terms of getting money to us.
Uh-huh.
So it's very specific amounts that you can do.
Oh,
but
okay.
You can just send a check.
Sure.
The address is on there.
Very good. And it is obviously tax deductible.
It is tax deductible.
As we draw the end of this tax year.
That's right.
If you're looking for a place to really have some power to your dollars, I mean, I'm not saying not to give to your normal everyday
food
street
banks
level
or whatever, yeah.
nonprofits. But, I mean, you really could get a lot of bang for your dollar, a buck, if you will.
There's a lot of leverage there.
Yeah, there really is. It's I think that people would be surprised to learn that. And hopefully they've had some eyes open from listening to your discussion of it. But I just think it's really interesting what's going on behind the scenes, which hopefully we'll pull the curtains back a little bit from time to time maybe. And you probably have lots of fun stories, I suspect, which maybe we can, without, you know, giving
away. Oh, I'm loaded with stories. What kind of story do you want? I never reveal names.
No. I mean, life is a big story anyway.
I think
people forget sometimes. And I always feel bad when one of the things I feel sad about when someone dies is if the stories are basically dying with them.
Yes.
It just seems... A colleague of mine a while back said that it's like a library burning down.
You know, I hadn't thought of it that way, but my gosh, what a great description.
Oh, I thought, you know, that's true. And how many people have we encountered in our lives who have, we know they have these, and we've heard some of their great stories, and then they die.
That's why I love the NPR StoryCorps concept.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
And I think it's
important.
And
we should all do that.
We really should. And, you know, one of the things I think the fun things from is that all of us can do this. We can interview each other. You know, we don't have to do it on the radio. We don't have to do something really formal. I mean, you can get inexpensive little recorders. And rather than just, I mean, because I think it's hard for someone just to turn the recorder and just start talking. I mean, some people could do it.
I'm
not saying it's not possible, but but I think if you you know, if you're in a family, if there's more than one of you, you can interview each other, or maybe it's friends interviewing each other, because you'll know things about your friend or your family member that maybe they won't think to say. But through the interview process, I think and the recording of the stories, and we can maybe try to, you know, reclaim or at least lay claim to some of the libraries that might burn down otherwise.
You know, my niece surprised me a few years ago by, she lives down in Camas, and she was up visiting her dad, and she said, "Can I interview you?"
Yeah.
Great. Her mom, my sister, died a number of years ago. And my sister and my brother and I all are really interested in doing family research, family history. My brother's just gone compulsive about it. But my niece, Lisa, wanted to hear more about what our life was like growing up because she didn't have her mom to ask anymore.
Sure.
So, first of all, that was wonderful. And secondly, it was fun for me to talk about that. And we must have talked for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then... both of us were exhausted. So if you're going to do it, you have to do it in smaller chunks.
That
don't
makes
do
sense. But, you know, you can
but get... it felt really good to know that that would be carried on, because the reason Lisa was doing it was so she could tell her kids.
Okay. Now, she was recording it.
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Yes.
Because that makes it so. And sometimes people say, well, gee, I'm going to feel uncomfortable if it's being recorded. And I say, you know, you might think that for a minute, but as soon as you get in and you start talking, you will forget that it's even there, and you'll just be having a good time and going back and forth. And I think if we could, start the interview project or something.
Right.
But
right.
It's so inexpensive. I mean, the recorders, you can go to one of the office supply places, and they got these little recording devices that'll record hours in a digital form.
So maybe I should record some nonprofit stories as words of warning.
Yeah,
because it's,
I think so.
Those are usually the stories I tell, words of warning.
I think that would be a good one if we get you on the Legal Line Network here. But maybe some of the stories, though, because it really helps people. And we all love stories anyway.
Absolutely.
And to hear the stories. And I know a lot of times when I go give talks and stuff, it'll be full of different little stories.
Oh, mine
are
too.
And it's just so much fun, and it's more fun for all of us to talk in stories, I think. And so...
Mm-hmm.
That's neat.
Because as you said earlier, life is a story.
It really is. And it's every day is
a new chapter,
yeah,
right?
A new chapter, at least, you know, maybe some short chapters some days and long chapters. Some days seem really long, and that's okay. We got to work with it.
Yeah.
So now the Nonprofit Center, again, is at
NPCenter.
Thank you.
As in nonprofit.
NPCenter.org.
Yep.
Want to
yep.
make sure that, and that'll be up. We'll put that up as a link. But now, everybody, I'm sure, who's listening wants to know, okay, Tell me again, who is Liz Heath? I mean, where do you come from? Where do you, if someone asks you, where do you come from, Liz?
Well, one of the things is the geography of where I come from. I have so much fun with that because I was born on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Oh.
So I'm a Youper, and if I say that, some people will say, "Oh, okay," but not very many, because that's what we call ourselves. Youper is somebody from the UP.
All right.
But we came out here when I was quite young because my father went to work for Weyerhaeuser, and I grew up in Tacoma, then went to school in Wisconsin and lived in Oregon, and then came back after I got divorced. Chose to come back to Tacoma. That's the geography.
Yeah.
But I'm really a child of the 50s. You go to college, you become a teacher, nurse, secretary, or librarian, then you get married and live happily ever after. That's what children of the 50s were taught to expect.
Yep.
Well, I went to college. I didn't want to be a teacher. I can't stand being around sick people, and I thought being a librarian would really be boring. And I always played office when I was a kid. So after I graduated from college, I went to secretarial school for a year, and I worked as a secretary.
Okay.
My first permanent job was in a hospital where I started the volunteer program. Don't ask me why, but that was a long time ago, and that was my first foray into the nonprofit world. Was starting a volunteer program in a hospital. They didn't have any volunteers.
Really?
Yeah. It was a very small hospital. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So got married, put my ex-husband through school, got divorced. We moved to Oregon, got divorced, and I had been on the board of a nonprofit, and my term was up, and about a year later, the executive director decided to move on. I needed to go back to work, so I became the director of that. I mean, I went through the whole hiring process, but became the director. So that was a 4-year gig.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided I should make some money instead of work in the nonprofit world. So I left Eugene and came back to Tacoma to work for the phone company when it was the phone company.
Some of us will remember the phone company. Some of us will say, what?
I was in business marketing, and I lasted a year.
Yeah.
I couldn't sell people stuff they didn't need.
Oh, no.
I'm a good salesperson, but I couldn't do it. So I got back into nonprofits. And since then, I've been doing development, you know, fundraising work, consulting. I've worked as a development director. And then sort of in the mid-90s, I had this idea for something like the Nonprofit Center. I don't know where the idea came from, because I didn't realize that there are others like us around the country. But I got a pilot project funded by Clover Park Technical College to test out the concept of an educational and support center for nonprofits. We called it the Institute for Nonprofit Development. I still have some coffee mugs with that logo on it. And in the course of that pilot project, I also wrote a nonprofit management curriculum for Clover Park, which sadly they never used. But that was what they got out of it. They were going to use it, and it was circumstantial. But it proved that there was a need for the kind of thing that we did. So July 27th, 1999, I went down to Olympia and incorporated the Nonprofit Center.
Okay.
We had a board of six wonderful people who are still loyal to us now.
That's great.
People that are well known in the community, and they're the best. So that was 11 plus years ago, and here we are.
Thriving and actually...
Well, moving, surviving.
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 I'd say thriving, at least intellectually.
Programmatically, thriving, absolutely.
Program-wise, yes.
Yeah.
But these are such tough times for probably everybody, I guess, in the especially in the nonprofit.
You know, we live in a very generous community. We really do. And I am truly encouraged when I see the kind of response that individuals in the community make when there's need for food and when there's need for shelter. We really do have a generous community.
Yeah, which is encouraging.
Yeah.
And, leads one to maybe an optimistic outlook.
People, for the most part, really are good and care about each other.
Yeah, I think that's probably
there true. Are many who don't, but the lots of good ones out there.
And sometimes we can't do much about the ones who don't.
No, we can't.
We have to move ahead and not be dragged down by them, I think, sometimes.
I think you're right.
All right, so now people listening to Liz Heath are saying, I can hear a comment, well, what's something that I don't know about Liz? Is there something that might surprise people or the people?
That's an exercise I use with boards all the time. tell this board something that nobody knows about you. I used to race sports cars.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
I love cars.
Really?
And fast boats. And my favorite car that I ever owned was a British Racing Green 1965 MGB with wire wheels and knockoffs.
Oh, I can picture that car.
Oh, that was my baby.
Great car.
and my husband actually was a crew chief for a guy who raced on the Trans Am circuit.
Wow.
Not very well, but the sad piece about that was that Jack's car was a Camaro Trans Am. And so Steve, my husband, said, well, we need a parts car, so we're going to sell your car and we're going to buy a Camaro.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of the end.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Steve's a good man. Don't get me wrong, but it wasn't.
So do you like the looks of the new Camaro that's out now?
I don't like American cars. Well, I shouldn't say that. I've just said a terrible thing, haven't I?
No.
I used to be able to identify any car in the world. I can't do that anymore.
No, I think that's what a lot of us would feel, and why we might not like them as much is they're all nondescript.
I don't know if I like it or not.
It's
I don't know what it looks like.
I guess they all everything looks.
But alike. The car I want to have, a Morgan.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a British car, wood frame.
Wow.
And my family name is Morgan, so I should have one.
I think so.
I think they cost like $100,000.
I think so. Probably the nonprofit center is not going to be providing that as a perk.
I don't think so.
So I think you're going to have to work that one on your own. Or maybe if there's a distant relative who wants to leave you something in their will.
Well, I think all the relatives that have any money are dead, so I don't think that's going to happen.
So be careful when you get that email saying, there's a relative.
Oh, yeah, right. Get them
all you've
the
got
time.
To do is send us a little advance money, and we'll take care of that for you. So.
The other thing that about me that I guess some people know is that I really am a writer and I love to write. I really enjoy that. And, I'm going to have to retire someday. I'm well past retirement age.
I don't know.
And, I am. And but I have no retirement because I've been in the nonprofit sector most of my life. So I have to keep working until I can't work anymore.
Yep.
But... it's at some point it's going to be time for me to move on from the center and let somebody else take it into the next iteration.
Maybe the keyboard will be in your future.
right. Yeah. I've got lots of stuff I'd like to write.
Great.
I just need to set up a good place to do
fiction,
that.
Fiction, nonfiction?
Oh, stuff about nonprofits.
Okay, great.
And pet peeve columns.
Excellent.
Those are the ones I compose in my head as I'm driving around town.
We need to be recording those.
I should, shouldn't I?
Keep a little recorder with you.
Thought I would, but it's such a negative thing to do a pet peeve column, so I decided I really wouldn't do it.
I don't know, but I think we learn from something like a pet peeve column. I mean, something where, because people will look and say, they might agree with you, or they might say, oh, I'm doing that. That's why I'm so annoying
to people.
Oh,
if only.
I don't know, but I think we learn from things like that. I was looking at a book the other day I guess it was Jim Stovall. It was a collection of columns that he's done or something.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun to read the little columns. It was all collected together in a book.
Well, actually, as I used to write a column for the News Tribune. It was weekly at first, and then it was twice a month.
Of course, the newspapers are having such a tough time.
Yeah, right. And so it's been 2.5 years since I did that. But I have all of those columns, and I did it for 8 years. So every now and then I haul them out and say, okay, I'm going to organize these into some sort of book. But, oh, my gosh, they're all over the map. And organizing, I think I have to print them all out and spread them out on the floor to because I just can't wrap my head around
it. Yeah, I think that helps them. I could see, you know, you spread, and then you can actually, obviously you can see them then, and you can order them in some fashion,
right,
probably.
Right.
That's good. So that's good to know. We'll have some books coming out in the future.
Well,
maybe
all I need is somebody to front me the money to do
all
the
right.
work.
Well, all right. If anybody wants to
wants to be a publisher,
that's right. You know, I think publishing may get, I'm tempted to say, may get easier because of the internet.
It's easier to publish. But the marketing is the
marketing
piece.
Is the tough part.
Marketing is the tough part.
No, marketing of anything, whether it be the Legal Line show or program
right.
on the Legal Line Network, there's a marketing element that is going on as, you know, as we speak, so to speak, and over time we'll be spreading out more and more.
Yeah,
but
job. It is. I was at a conference in San Francisco just on nonprofit governance a couple of weeks ago. It was a really good conference. And the best person at the conference is a woman by the name of Kathy Trower. And she is going to be our keynote speaker at our governance conference next November. She's that good. I booked her already.
Wow.
She works at Harvard with some of the leaders in nonprofit governance thinking, and she is one of them. But anyhow, I was talking with her about arranging this speaking engagement. Somebody from one of the primary nonprofit publishers was at that conference in her session and came up to her afterwards, and they're going to give her an advance to write a book.
Whoa.
I am so jealous.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
That's great.
Josie Bass is a wonderful publishing house, and they do the marketing.
That's great.
So, yeah, anybody can publish a book.
That's, yeah.
Anybody can start a nonprofit.
Yep.
But to do it right, to get it out there, you know, it takes a lot more.
If you are a nonprofit, you're starting a nonprofit that's kind of under the radar, I guess, if you will. Would you say one of the best things they could consider doing is joining the Nonprofit Center? Is that legitimate?
Well,
to say,
joining this, of course, because I'm biased.
Right.
But joining the Nonprofit Center gets them discounted rates for everything,
which is really good.
Yeah.
To things they need.
For example, I haven't talked about this at all. We do accounting and bookkeeping for small nonprofits.
Really?
Yep. We are not CPAs.
Interesting.
But we do, you know, monthly bookkeeping.
Okay.
I'm going to make a lot of people mad with what I'm about to say, but there are a lot of people who do bookkeeping, and they think doing nonprofit bookkeeping is just the same as everything else. Why would it be any different? And we have had to clean up so many messes because it's very, very different.
Interesting.
So the staff at the center who do this are well-versed in nonprofit bookkeeping. And so that's part of how we earn our money.
That's great.
So if an organization joins the center, they pay $40 an hour versus $60 an hour.
Great. So they really do, they get the service, which is probably good at 60 even, but they get the service at a discounted rate.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you say, all the great events that you have in the workshops and
all of our
classes,
seminars are $50 for members, and I don't remember what they are for non-members, but I think it's 70 or 75.
Is it a big investment for a nonprofit to join?
We have a sliding scale. It ranges from $100 to $350 a year.
Okay, so very reasonable even at the high end.
Yeah.
This is great. And so, again, for any of us listening who are trying to think of a good place to put a couple bucks where it really, we are leveraging tremendously, I think, including the Nonprofit Center in your list of charities each year would make a lot of sense.
You know, we do an event we do several events. We're doing a wine tasting in January, an upscale wine tasting. This is going to be very, very good wine.
Very good.
But that's a small event.
Uh-huh.
But every year we have what we call the Nonprofit Excellence Awards Luncheon.
Yes.
And that's open to the entire community.
Great.
It doesn't cost anything, but the expectation is that people will make a gift.
Sure.
And at that event, we recognize three nonprofits and one corporation for their excellence in certain areas.
Great.
For the nonprofit side, in impact, innovation, and governance. So we give those three awards.
Very good.
So we're saying to the rest of the world, these are folks that are doing something well. Look at them. They are organizations you can emulate.
Right.
You can look to for some good practices.
Because that's something we all look for, I think, in whatever it is we're doing.
Right, right.
Is to get some help in that regard.
So we do that, and then we give a corporate award to a corporation that does not just giving in the community, but the whole giving, volunteering, supporting, however they, you know, it's more comprehensive than just who gives the most money.
That's great.
So that will be coming up in March. And then we have a speaker. I don't know who it's going to be yet. I haven't got that confirmed.
All right. So somebody calls you and they say, I'm thinking of starting a nonprofit. What do you, what's the one thing, the most important thing you're going to say to that person on the other end of the phone?
The first thing I say after I tell myself I can't hang up, because we get 3 to 5 of those a month easily. The first thing I say is why. What are you going to do?
Okay.
And then I say, what have you done to look around the community and see why that's needed?
Okay.
And the answer to the second question is usually, oh, nothing. I don't need to do
that. I just know it's good.
I know it's good. And then I say, you need to go to our website, and I send them to that checklist, that starting a nonprofit checklist. And I say to them, I would be happy to help you and guide you after you've completed all 10 of those things.
Excellent.
And so when you have, give me a call back. And one out of about 500 calls back. They don't do it. They go ahead and start the nonprofit, but they don't do that stuff. And it's really unfortunate, because the IRS is not really very restrictive in giving out tax exempt status.
I think people think it is, and yet
it's relatively easy to start a nonprofit. You incorporate with the state. It costs you, I think, $60.
That's not very much.
You fill out the IRS form. If you can fake it, to do it right, you need to know what your plan is, because they ask questions about that, and you have to fill out information. But I've known people who just drop numbers in. What the heck? And that costs you $800, I think. However, we are very discouraged to learn that the IRS is going to put that online and only charge $250.
Wow.
So for less than $500, you can become a nonprofit.
Interesting. All right, take the balance of the funds and invest them in the nonprofit center. we'll recommend to people. All right, the website again, npcenter.org.
That's right.
That's where you want to go for all this information and to route out to the other spots as well.
And I need to add, I really appreciate your putting in the contribution part of that. That wasn't part of our deal, appreciate that.
But I think it's really important that that we all realize that, I mean, it does take dollars to run good things. And
well, thank you for highlighting that.
This is going to become a permanent Bobcast podcast to some people, but Bobcast. And so people will be able to, to hear about some of the works of the Nonprofit Center, and I think it's a great organization. I appreciate you taking time to be with us. We've been talking to Liz Heath, who is the executive director of the Nonprofit Center. Drop by her website. Drop a card in the mail to her. How about a postcard? We could do a postcard. No, you can send an email. You can call.
Right.
She's a very accessible person and doing a great job here in the community. You're listening to Legal Line. I am Bob Pittman. I'm the crazy attorney who makes house calls still, and we try each week to demystify the law, translate the legalese, and point you in the right direction with regard to your legal questions and legal problems. You can catch us generally live on a stream every Wednesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific time. And then, of course, the Legal Line archive, it's just at bobpittman.com. You're already there, I guess, so I'm preaching to the people who already have found it, but be sure to let people know that you can just go to bobpittman.com, hit the Legal Line page, and look for the archive, and all the programs are there. We've got some fun ones there, interesting ones just like the one today. And we have a lot of fun upcoming programs. We will be taking your calls, answering your legal questions in upcoming programs. So until next week, we will say stay in control of your legal affairs. This is Bob Pittman for the Legal Line Network.